seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
So you're welcome along to Golf Weekly, or should we say the Tiger Woods is back, isn't he, special Golf Weekly. It's a Sunday. It is 4:37 on a Sunday. I can't believe this is happening. A miraculous number of events have coincided. Not least, Nathan Murphy not being at a Premier League game. Hello.
How are you?
You're here in studio instead. Very exciting.
Yeah, I've been very... I was at peak excitement on Friday night when we were WhatsApping each other and we were suggesting we should do a special pod on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
About 9 o'clock last night, I was thinking...
We can't back out now, can we? Well, I was joined excitement on Friday when you suggested on WhatsApp we do this. And knowing that I would want to back out, therefore tweeted it from the Golf Weekly account.
I was wondering who did that.
Yeah, sorry.
I assumed it was Fionn.
And then dug out the old password for the off the ball thing and retweeted that.
Ooh.
For maximum exposure.
Wow.
Meaning minimum chance it was pulling out.
Here we are.
Yeah. Fionn Davenport by the medium of telephone, landline. Hello.
Hello, lads.
How you doing?
I'm all right, yeah.
So some ground rules, Fionn. You're a second-class citizen in this discussion. If you were
sure.
Here, you could interrupt all you want, but you're going to speak when spoken to, my friend.
Yes, sir.
But you can also interrupt. I'm leaving your fader up, so don't cough. Don't fake talk to your girlfriend who's not actually there.
She's left the room. I'm actually watching the golf.
Coincidence, yeah. So I'll start with some tweets, okay? And then we get into Tiger. Chris Fitzpatrick says, I'm seriously thinking of getting my back fused. I think we all are. Hashtag scratch golfer. On Friday, when there was admittedly peak excitement, said, dear God, lads, I hope it hasn't all turned to shit by then when we said we were going to do a podcast. It's so great to see him back. Lenny Clark, meanwhile, said, lads, let's not get ahead of ourselves, but I'm giving Tiger 2 years before Jack's record goes. Mark Rose Hare tweeted in. Mark Rose Hare.
Can we just talk about this for one moment?
Has a Twitter handle.
So this is the golfing moment of the year. Certainly the golfing moment of the last 3-4 months. The return of Tiger.
Uh-huh.
It's Thursday night.
Yeah.
The sporting world are suddenly switching back on to golf. Back onto Sky Sports Golf, their specially designed golf channel. What are we going to do, boys? Let's get the big guns out. Let's put ourselves front and center. Let's put our best foot forward. Let's get Mark Rowe.
I know. Yeah. Did you see last night they had some young lad called Robin Tiger Woods? Robin Tiger Williams.
I did.
Who's meant to be the next hot shot, 16 years old?
Well, he played in the British Masters.
Right.
He got an invite. He's obviously got talent.
Yeah.
But also based on his name.
Because at one point, Simon Holmes was saying to him, what advice would you give Tiger there? They're playing in the wind. And I was thinking, I don't know if that's the way to talk to a 16-year-old about Tiger Woods. But however.
Hey, Fionn, what advice would you give Sergio Aguero about how to finish from 6 yards out? Like, really?
Yeah, it was a strange... Although, the 16-year-old...
A point well made, Nathan Murphy.
Precocious 16-year-old didn't actually say, well, I wouldn't give Tiger Woods any advice. He started going, well, I'd have a shorter swing.
Have you noticed, though, that Simon Holmes' credit has been reduced somewhat? It used to be coach to 2 major winners. Now it's coach to 2 former Ryder Cup captains.
That's an upgrade.
Yeah. Upgrade?
The Ryder Cup is everything. I noticed... I noticed Simon Holmes was referring to Tommy Fleetwood one point when they were talking about scrambling or some stats he was doing well in. He was like, and Europe's very own Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, like, who cares that he's Europe's very own? I just would prefer if he said England's very own Tommy Fleetwood.
Oh, well, then you're getting into a pre and post Brexit chat.
Well, I know that. But I mean,
where Tommy Fleetwood sits in the world order. Well, maybe it's that he's over there representing Europe.
See, that's what I just don't buy. Do you feel so European that you feel Tommy Fleetwood's representing you and European golf?
I sort of feel that there's such an expectation that the Americans are going to go and dominate the Ryder Cup, and that this is the narrative that has come forward with Alan Shipnook's article from a couple of weeks back, that suddenly all of European golf feels the need to constantly point out that all of our team is currently inside the top 25 in the world.
Yeah.
We're no chumps.
We're under siege.
Or is it perhaps that because Simon Holmes is employed by Sky, who have presumably paid a fortune to broadcast the Ryder Cup exclusively. So he's very much on brand message, you know.
That was my suspicion, I have to say.
He's trying to wriggle his way into the Wednesday evening highlights show or something. At Le Golf National.
Yeah. So anyway, Mark Rosehair, which has its own...
ecosystem.
Its own Twitter handle now. It's at Mark Rosehair. Shockingly, it wasn't taken. That handle. It simply says, flowing at the sides, long at the back, nothing on top. Perfect. What's not to love? I, full stop, am, full stop, delicious, full stop. Who has the time to do this?
Fionn.
And tweet us. Fionn. At an airport waiting someday, you did this, didn't you? So anyway, Brian Haggerty he tweeted a picture of Tiger yesterday in particular. He seemed to hit a lot of drives into the trees or whatever. And he had a picture and he just said, at Golf Weekly NT, I just can't see woods for the trees. That was good.
It was, and yeah. I think that was actually Thursday evening. He sent Tiger a couple woods. Couple of ride off the tee.
Right. Anthony O'Connell was in Amsterdam working. He was listening to ye shiting on about Tiger, who's currently 2 under and looking okay. Sheelan Strain said, the glutes are firing, lads. He's back. Disclaimer, this was tweeted after the 8th hole on Thursday. And finally, Keith Ludlow sent a picture which caught my eye. Him and Eugene and Rob and Keith all enjoying the pod at Chambers Bay. Remember Chambers Bay, the US Open? Mm. I'm curious, Keith, was it any good? Because it was it's clearly wintertime you're playing it, so it looked like it was a much greener looking course than US Open time. So I'd be curious to know what Chambers Bay was like with a bit of greenery on it. Do let us know. So anyway, they're your tweets. That's not the reason we're here. We are here to discuss Tiger Woods. So we're recording Thursday at 10 to 5. Not overly relevant.
Sunday.
Tiger's missed Sunday. God, yeah. I wish. Tiger Woods just missed a birdie putt from 8 feet on the first. That much we can tell you.
Well, I can tell you more if you want. He's made birdie on the third.
Right.
Yeah, and he scrambled to save par on the second. He's actually playing okay.
Okay. So regardless now of whether Tiger shoots 5 or 6 under or 5 or 6 over, once he doesn't bend over and hold his back and gingerly withdraw from the tournament, we have seen enough here to justify this even to a Monday morning audience on their way to work who want our thoughts on Tiger. We've seen enough. You know, he could shoot 4, 5, 6 under today or 4, 5, 6 over. That's very possible. So based on the first 3 days, Fionn, I'll politely let you go first, seeing as you're on the phone. Give us some initial thoughts then, because everybody's very excited.
Well,
people who don't like golf are talking about golf again.
Because he's the one, he's the 5-star attraction. He's the one, despite all the others, and golfers like golfers, but non-golfers like Tiger Woods. Obviously he played brilliantly the first day, played even better the second day, I thought, but in it, there was a lot of scrambling. He made pars, his up and downs, his distance control has been a problem, which is, I guess, to be expected, given that he hasn't teed it up in such a long time. So he was leaving a lot short, but he was getting up and down for par, and he went on this nice birdie run. So whatever he shot 69, 68. And then yesterday, it all went kind of pear-shaped. But I wouldn't be as despondent as some people were, because the course was playing 2.9 shots over what it was playing for the first couple of days. And Tiger hit that mark exactly. So he shot 73 yesterday or whatever it was. 75. Sorry.
Over.
So actually, no, he played it a few over. But it was playing 72.9 yesterday. So when you look at what Henrik Stenson was doing, Dustin Johnson, like really good players were having a bit of a mare. And Tiger was playing better than they were. So, you know, I'm just watching him here now, and he's pretty controlled. He's hit some nice shots. He's made 2 really sweet putts. I'm with Joe, I have to say. I think whether he shoots 4 under today or 4 over, so long as his back doesn't trouble him, I think there's plenty to be excited about in the upcoming season. Although, mind you, as Nathan texted the little WhatsApp group, is the boom is back the other day. I want to believe that that's true, but I'm not. I'm not really sure that that's quite true yet.
That was Nathan hit. That was the wrong group. He just got his latest corporate check. That was meant for his wife.
Yeah. I wish. But,
so I think more than anything is that I remember years and years ago when they used to say that you could always tell if Tiger Woods is going to have like a brilliant tournament just based on one observation, that's distance control. If he was pin high, he was always going to do really, really well, which seems like an obvious thing to say. But when you take into account that if you can hit one, say, 8 yards short or 8 yards long and still make your putt, but that if you're flush high with the pin, that's the marker. And he's nowhere near that, like not even close. He had some lovely like short irons in on the first 2 days, but overall, like, he was either a bit long or he's a bit short, and I mean, he's going to have to fix all that up, but I've no doubt that he will. That's the thing. It's just like he just needs to get a few tournaments in, bit of practice, and also it doesn't help the wind, because I was watching Justin Thomas today, who was overshooting the green as well, and you know, so maybe the wind is playing havoc with all of them. But yeah, I mean, it's all rust. But like, so long as he tightens it up, I think he'd be fine.
I think we got to remember just where Tiger is coming from is one of the reasons we're so excited. So it's been pointed out a lot that it's this tournament last year, the last time Tiger played 4 consecutive rounds, played a 72-hole event. Before that, you have to go back a further 15 months. So in the last 2.25 years, this will just be the second 72-hole tournament that he's played. I'm going up and down like crazy there,
sorry,
I think.
Sorry, that was me, yeah.
So he's starting from an incredibly low base in terms of time on the golf course. It was interesting listening to himself and Ricky Fowler so Ricky was obviously talking up Tiger over the last few weeks, as a lot of people were, but they were saying that a good chunk of their time on the golf course was spent on distance control. Tiger simply trying to figure out again how far he can hit the ball.
Yeah. I read that in The Observer today, where he was saying, well, he says a lot of the younger lads are texting him for money rounds and come out and play, which is kind of like he seems to be more willing to interact with these guys than his own peers back in the day. But he was saying that he was having a good few rounds at Ricky Fowler, where he was like stopping him and asking him, what clubs are you hitting? Just to get a feel for that. And actually, this is the first time he has found he's kind of vaguely in the same ballpark distance-wise as Fowler. So, I mean, like, he's at that basic level. It's like, imagine us getting a new set of clubs or, you know, just not playing for a long time. Even us figuring out distances would be tricky. I would say at their level, where it's so unbelievably precise, it's a whole other ball game. But, yeah, it's funny. I saw him mention that quote to a bit Fowler as well, where...
And he was flying the green a lot. Yeah. And particularly on Thursday, a lot of the pin positions were right at the front of the green, and he'd find himself 5 foot short, and suddenly he's got a little pitch. So overall, I think it couldn't have gone much better.
Yeah.
You look at his driving, he looks strong. Like, the ball speed he's getting is far beyond what anyone could have expected.
Yeah.
Ball speed is above what Justin Thomas has.
Yeah. That was, I mean, so I was very hopeful, I must say, with Fionn and Peter Lawrie a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, look, I wouldn't have been surprised if the whole thing blew up in our faces. But because of what the fusion had done for Davis Love, and look, Tiger should be having a fusion in his 50s. Like, it's not a good situation. But seeing what the fusion has done, so I was very hopeful his back would be okay. But, and so, assuming that that's okay and it looks to be, I was wondering, well, what's the speed going to be? You know, like, any top coach would tell you, even with a kid they're working with, I want to see some speed. Like, what speed have I got to work with? That's the raw material. And so Tiger's ball speed has been, when it's been good this week, 178-179 miles an hour. So Dermot Calise even pointed this out, a few other people did. That puts Tiger like top 20 on tour ball speed. That means he's somewhere between Adam Scott and JB Holmes for ball speed. And so if you had said that, because my overriding memory of last year was we were deluding ourselves over Tiger and how good he was, because he looked like an old man swinging a golf club. It was like, oh my God, look, he's swinging again. But it was slow motion. It was like, the club's not even blurred here on the downswing. I can see the club the whole way through. So my big concern was, oh, well, Tiger will come back, but he'll still look like an old man with the driver. Whereas actually, on a number of occasions, he's looked perfectly passable for a top 25 in the world player. Like, not phenomenal, but perfectly passable. And so you're thinking, holy shit, that's an unbelievable starting point. If, because even Joe LaCava was saying in the Observer today, Nathan, he was saying, we practiced a couple of weeks ago and he was hitting it quite well. LaCava was even saying, I can't believe his speed. I never thought he'd get this much speed in the space of 2 weeks. So where is he going to get to? Where is this? We're
still only
excited.
2 months from that press conference at the President's Cup where he's talking about the realization that he may need to consider that he will never play golf again. And it doesn't, his swing doesn't look as explosive in the negative sense, in that it doesn't look like it's putting huge strain on his body. Now, I know Brandel Chamblee was talking about him needing to come off his right a little bit more and needs to move his right hip a little bit more.
Right.
But that, I think he is even surprised by just how good a shape Tiger's swing is in for the first round back.
Hmm.
Have you noticed? I mean, I totally agree with both of what you're saying. His swing, I mean, it's a kind of a progression of a swing that we've unfortunately not really been able to see over the last few years. But this seems to be the most finished iteration of a swing that's laid off beautifully. Like as Nathan said, like he's not whipping the club through. It's not coming up and over. Like it's this lovely kind of laid off action to his left. And I mean, I read the Brandel Chamblee stuff as well. And I mean, I guess you'll just get, you know, because he looks, not, I was going to say labored. Labored is the wrong word. He looks very controlled through his swing. But maybe he just needs to free it up just a fraction more to really groove it in. So that means his right hip is going to come around or whatever it is. But just looking at it here over the last couple of days, you'd be confident that this is a swing that can endure in the body of a 41-year-old who's had 3 back operations in the last 2 years or whatever.
Four,
yeah.
That's crazy. So, okay, ball speed then. So suddenly we're saying, okay, Adam Scott level of speed. He can work with that. The other concern, Peter Laurie mentioned it to us a couple of weeks ago, the chipping. So where's the chipping going to be? And on Thursday night, Nathan, there were a few chips and you're thinking, there's some scar tissue here. This is more than just being between patterns or whatever the hell he said it was that time when he really broke down. But then Friday, peak excitement. Some of the chips, it 3 amazing chips, 2 off the edge of the green and the one on the green. And you're thinking, geez, like I thought, Nathan, the one on the green, if you're feeling yippy, you just put
you don't want to put yourself in that position where you could be embarrassed and humiliated, as he has been.
Yeah, you blade it across the green and it's like, oh my God, you got another chip coming back. So he was obviously feeling good enough to chip that. And like the high-res slow-mo where he barely takes even a blade of grass. Mm. And
My concern always about the chipping was that it was the people who knew his game better than anyone were saying, you never come back from the chipping yip. So it was Butch and it was Hank Haney. And even with what they knew about Tiger's talent, they still couldn't go far enough to say, even with all that, Tiger can come back from the chipping yips. Quite simply, nobody does it.
Yeah.
There were a couple of chunky chips / pitches on Thursday, but I think that what happened Friday sort of seemed to wipe everything out.
They were saying it's very grainy, like they were difficult chips. And even we played a clip of Woods today on the Off the Ball show, and he was just saying, you know, like he was a bit nervous as well this week. Like it was, there's just no prepping for you go from at home where you make 5 bogeys and 9 birdies, and you're thinking, well, hey, this is great, to 1 or 2 bogeys and it snowballs and it's just a different proposition. So he was saying like that must be a contributory factor to some dodgy little chips into grain, and those greens on a plateau where you're down beneath, they're difficult chips anyway.
I wonder how nervous he is about his fitness as well.
Yeah.
That there's a part of me that's still concerned that he will bend down to pick up the tee.
I still watch him bending down.
And you go, ooh. And remember, he got through this tournament just fine. This time last year, all right, his body didn't look as in good shape, but he got through it and wasn't until he went to Tory and took the commercial flight to Dubai, it all seemed to go horribly wrong.
Yeah.
You'd wonder how long it takes him mentally, how many tournaments he needs to get through just fine before he has that confidence to
rip it.
To rip it.
A bit like the footballer who has to get the unexpected tackle to trust the knee again. Because he's still taking painkillers mid-round. Like he was,
right.
He was seen... and Fionn, feel free to come in on any of this after this point. He was seen taking some painkillers on the 9th. And so they said to him, were you feeling it or what's the story? And he said, oh no, I've got like a maintenance scheduled painkilling program. So he's like, my surgeon tells me on the 9th I take those painkillers, and he's pretty good at his job, so that's what I did. So, you know, maybe he's keeping swelling down. Maybe there's various bits and bobs. I mean, look, I don't know.
It's a bit worrying when it is a guy who's just out of rehab for prescription drugs is taking painkillers on the night.
I know. Like, who knows? That's the thing. It's mad to think. That's the last time we all really saw him was, or one of the last times was like the mugshot. And you thought, this guy is having a mental breakdown of some kind. So the chipping, Fionn, take that. You take that.
Yeah, it's funny. And I know, look, obviously, Peter made a point. He goes, you know, he had the chipping. I never really believed he had. Yeah, I don't. It's like, it's a bit like me giving Sergio Aguero more advice, but I don't really believe he ever had the chipping yips. Like, he had a horrendous time of it
at one tournament.
In that one tournament. Yeah. But, like, there's nothing I've seen in the last 3 days and five holes to suggest that this guy has anything like what we know to be the chipping yips. That he might have had no practice, he might be trying different things or whatever, he might be just, like, he certainly was nervous on Thursday, but, like, I thought on Friday, I thought his round, like, and you, I mean, you've described the chips that were really brilliant, like, I mean, like, low, with pace, judged the just to perfection. And lest we forget, and, you know, there'll come a time when we're going to do an entire podcast just outlining all of the extraordinary records that this guy holds and continues to hold. He's the greatest short game exponent the game has ever seen, in my opinion. He is way better than Mickelson, way better. The guy is magic and always has been. So maybe it's like, will he reach the exalted standards where he can hit those shots that Jack Nicklaus would go, oh my God, I didn't even think you could make that shot. I don't know, but I don't believe he has the chipping yips, and that would be the least of my concerns. For me, it's the swing getting quick. That's the biggest thing. It's like, when his swing gets quick, he's all over the place, and then he starts flashing drives out into crazy places.
Funny, I'm not as worried. Okay, for sure, but I can live with that. I'm kind of feeling, I mean, the 3-wood he hit on the Friday, or was it the Thursday? 3-wood on the par 5, which shot up in the air and came down amazing. So I was kind of thinking, all right, he's going to get this under control. I suppose the great unknowable at this stage is the putting. I agree on the chipping yips. I don't think he had the chipping yips, not in the truest sense. I think it was just a meltdown over a round and just lack of practice. But I guess the putting is the one. Like, he missed a few last night. Tiger in his pump doesn't miss. And even when he came back post the scandal and everything, and, you know, just the last couple of years, his putting, it's just, he's not doing them, pulling off the miracles that he kind of did routinely. So I think we're probably heading for a point, if I had to guess at this stage, where Woods can be a top 20 ball striker and be very solid tee to green, and then be a top 20 putter. I kind of feel like we're heading for a top 20 kind of Tiger Woods. That's my best guess.
In a top 20 wins twice a year kind of way.
Maybe.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
And like, if you're offering me now 5 years of Tiger Woods contending vaguely as a top 20 type player does, then I'd take it, because, like, the big lesson from the Hero World Challenge is just, like, golf can kid itself with all these young kids that it likes to talk about as being great, but you can tell for a fact, nobody outside of golf cares about them. They see them all as, like, these right-wing, white, balding in their 20s, well-adjusted kids that are just not interesting, and Rory's kind of cool, and Spieth seems to be a bit different. But funny enough, people outside of golf think he's boring, even though he's not. And so it was just a lesson the last few days. Like, geez.
I think they realize that as well.
Tiger so much.
I think these younger players realize that. Sorry, Fionn. I just think that Fowler, Spieth, Justin Thomas, they know what it will do to their legacy if Tiger can come back, and if Tiger has a 5 years where he wins a couple of majors, but they also beat him in a couple of majors, what that does for them.
Yeah.
It changes the way people look at their careers.
And I was trying to think as well, so we've talked about the PGA wraparound season. It's not doing it for any of us. It's just not, it's not enough. And I was like, so suddenly, like, the last few days, I'm watching Charlie Hoffman with a chip on the edge of the green, and I'm about a gazillion times more interested in it. And it suddenly hit me, oh, it's because what having Tiger in a tournament does is it's basically all about Tiger Woods. But now Tiger Woods is so interesting that what Hoffman is doing is interesting in the context of Tiger Woods. I will watch to see if Hoffman birdies or bogeys instead of making a cup of tea, because it has a relevance to Tiger Woods' round. So, like, literally, he is the sun. Everybody is orbiting him, and suddenly everyone else becomes a bit more interesting because of him. And, like, golf just needs to pray to holy moly God that this guy plays 20 tournaments a year.
I absolutely agree. I think the most I would hope for, I mean, my ultimate ambition, or what I would like to see Tiger Woods do, is to be the Kelly Slater of golf, in the sense, you know, you can have your Mick Fannings and your Nat Youngs and Julian Wilsons and whatever, but that Kelly Slater, at like whatever age he is now.
The first two I was good with, the second two I was... Listen, you go on one junket to Hawaii 10 years ago and you think you're some sort of an expert.
Joe Parkinson, of course.
Joe's language.
Joe Parkinson, another fine surfer.
Yeah, because wasn't Joe your first foray into kind of sports documentary was on Mick Fanning, wasn't it?
First and only. First ever trip News Talk, I was 21, lied about my experience to get in here, and quite literally nobody could go on this junket to Hawaii in December. One person could go and then had to pull out 24 hours beforehand. And so I got a phone call. I didn't even have a job here. They were like, can you go to Hawaii tomorrow for 10 days?
Okay.
Okay. But
so, like, you know, I mean, what little I know about surfing is that Kelly Slater reinvented himself and dominated and still was the box office draw that the world outside of surfing was interested in. Because, frankly, you know, you ask someone with a vague passing knowledge of surfing to name surfers, and past Kelly Slater, it's going to get a little tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Tiger is that. He's that guy. Can I just press pause on the Tiger love for a second? And I wanted to ask you both. Okay, so Charlie Hoffman, obviously, so far is the big success story of this thing. But to me, Jim Bones McKay has been unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's just his analysis, the tone of his voice. It's like he's been doing this his entire life.
Yeah, he's an impressive man.
He just slotted into the COCOM seat and just was like, "Hey guys," and has not sounded like a newbie at all.
Mm. Yeah, no, totally agree. Did you hear much?
Yeah, I only heard a bit last night because Thursday night, Friday night, I was at work, so I was watching with the sound down. But I'd seen a bit of him earlier in the season, and again, it's not that long since he was out there, so he actually has this understanding of the younger players. I don't mind. So there's been a lot of criticism of Chambly this week. Jason Duffner's been having
What happened there? I know Chambly's blocked him.
So yeah. Chambly seems to have been insinuating today that Duffner's coach doesn't like him and sent his guy out to bat for him. And that Chambly's coming out with some research in the next week or so that undermines a lot of modern coaching.
Yeah, and also almost specifically undermines Duffner's coach. Like, he was accusing Duffner and his coach of finding out that, Chambly's about to present something which completely undermines the teachings of Duffner's coach. And it's almost like they've set out to discredit Chambly somehow, or gone a preemptive strike. So I don't know if that's true or not, obviously.
But I also found it strange, a lot of the criticism that was coming from the players was, Chambly doesn't know us. Have you ever spoken to him? Have you ever spoken to him on the range? He doesn't come and talk to me. But from the night Chambly was on off the ball, that is Chambly's modus operandi. That's the way he works off the statistics. He works off the videos. He doesn't want to be coloured by the personal relationship.
Oh, it's a testament to him. I don't want to be their friends.
Yeah.
I can
give an honest opinion.
Yeah. Like, how can I talk to Duffner on the range and then say everything Duffner does is wrong?
Yeah. Just on Joel Acava, Tim Mickelson is staying on Phil's bag.
Saw that, yeah.
So he's just John Rahm. Go find yourself a new manager.
Yeah. And he's not going to manage Rahm anymore?
No.
I mean, look, as a long-term plan, that's a bad move.
Well, maybe his brother gives him a better rate than John Rahm.
John Rahm over the next 20 years versus Phil over the next 3.
That is true. Let's just remember, Tiger Woods has won a PGA Tour event more recently than Phil Mickelson.
Is that right?
That is
2013,
right.
And Phil was the
Phil
Open.
2013 since
your
Phil
field.
Last won a tournament.
Okay.
Do you know what player has won more tournaments in the PGA since 2008 than any other?
Tiger Woods.
That's right. Tiger Woods.
Shut the front door.
Yep.
Since 2008.
Yep. Since 2008, Tiger Woods has won more tournaments than any other player on the PGA Tour.
There was that amazing stat as well that since like the late 90s, the cumulative over-under par, Tiger was about 300 shots.
Majors. Did you see that?
Ahead of Phil Mickelson. And Phil was only like 2 shots clear of the next guy.
Yeah.
So like, as everything in golf, it's completely bunched and unbelievably minute, the differences between so many of the players. And then by Tiger. Some fluke, you have Tiger a million miles clear. I think he was 150-odd under, and Phil was 150-odd over.
Yeah. Yeah. There was something like 290 shots in the difference.
Oh, my God. Nuts. Yeah. So, look, this is just a kind of acoustic version of Thursday's pod, really. So we're not going to do much more, but I think this has been unbelievable. Like,
yeah.
The thought of going to Torrey Pines in February with Tiger Woods, another few months' practice.
Yeah. It's only when I start thinking about that I actually do get a little bit worried.
He's not flying to Dubai. He's not going
to
the desert.
Because in one way, like, does he play 20 times a year or does he just play 13 or 14 times a year and play Torrey Pines where he's won 7 times, even though he's had the last 2 appearances at Torrey Pines have been an absolute disaster. Yeah. I just wonder, the end of January, yeah. So he's got a good 2 months. How does he go about improving his fitness without going overboard?
Mm.
Has he learned those lessons? Is he happy with his swing as it is now, with that ball speed, and thinks, all right, actually, all I need is a little bit more practice, get my distances, yeah, and I'm back.
See, what will give you hope is whenever he's done those brief bits of co-commentary or any sit-down interviews, or even, you know, you watch his, the British Open video he's done, the Open champion, and the way he talks about, like, learning Lynx golf. So, needless to say, the greatest golfer we've ever seen is unbelievably intelligent about the game and strategic. So, you're just kind of hoping that that beats his ego here and that kicks in. And he says he can look at the stats, say, you know, top 20 speed, X, Y, and Z. And he's like, okay, in a very Jack Nicklaus way now, I'm going to try and make this win for me. You know, this is the guy who took the put the driver in the bag at Liverpool in 06 and stinger off the tee and almost checked his ego that day. Didn't hit a driver and found a way to win. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a battle between the ego, which understandably is massive, versus some kind of analytical slant, which will kick in and he'll say, do you know what? I have enough to win here. I just have to be really clever. I don't know what's going to win. Because he must be tempted to see how much more he can push it. Like, look where he's gone from in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So he must be thinking,
like, is he happy with what you're saying?
Yeah, I
don't
know if
he is. Being a top 20 player, yeah, winning twice a year, or is he thinking, you know what? It's not that long ago. 4 years ago, I won 5 times in a year.
Can I hit the ball for Dustin Johnson?
Yeah. Well, that'd be a good day, wouldn't it?
Maybe if I put on 10 pounds of muscle, I can. I mean, now that my back's fine, I put on 10 pounds of muscle, then I could hit it further than Dustin. I'm going to hit the weights. Like, someone needs to just, like, chain him to his bed if he starts talking like that.
There's also, I mean, the other life lesson he could learn is the Jordan Spieth lesson. It's like, Jordan Spieth has resisted the temptation to rework his swing to add length and is still, along with Dustin Johnson, the most dominant player in golf. So, you know, he could take a little bit from column A and a little bit from column B and figure out, okay, this is what's going to work for him and move on from there.
Yeah. Meanwhile, occasionally on my Instagram, Rory McIlroy puts up a video of the retreat, whatever the hell he's doing.
Where is he?
He's somewhere on a driving range.
Oh, he's that far along?
Yeah, he was hitting drivers. So,
I wonder, is he bored enough to talk to us on the podcast?
No. I'm sure he'll be on another podcast soon.
Mm.
I've said all I'm willing to say about Tiger for the time being. Unless anyone wants to add anything?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
What hole is he on now, Fionn, at 10 past
5? He is on the 6th.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Great.
Fionn, maybe I should have this conversation off air, but you know your Instagram...
Your Instagram, Fionn.
Your Instagram.
My
account.
Instagram, yeah.
I find it very confusing because I think because in your travel writer mode, you're, you know, putting up beautiful pictures all the time. And then I assume Fionn isn't around for the podcast because there's beautiful pictures of somewhere in Colombia. I think, Fionn must be back in Colombia. But they're just save pictures. I'm just saying,
well,
Fionn.
I'll pull the curtains back a little bit. Generally, with the travel writer thing, is I try and do, so say, for example, I might do 5 days, if I have 5 days worth of pictures, but I'm only going to be in Colombia for 3 days more, I'll do the 3 days and then I'll keep going the 2 days well after I get back, but then I'll stop. I'll never do, there's some people who kind of just chuck in a photograph from a place they were last year and pretend that they're there right now, which is cheating.
So were you in Amsterdam this weekend?
I was. Okay. I was in Amsterdam for the last few days. I just got back. Where did I get back? Yesterday.
So is it? It's frowned upon in the travel journalist world to put up a picture from a year ago, is it?
Well, you should hashtag it with a throwback. Or I mean, but then again, I mean, the whole premise of Instagram is deceit of some kind. You know, like all social media, it's pretending everything is far more beautiful, more interesting, more special than perhaps it truly is. But yeah, I think there's a sense of you try and be vaguely honest and authentic. By the way, Tiger Woods has just hit a gorgeous chip to about 6 feet.
It's a shame we have to wait 2 months till he plays again.
I know, it's killer. Yeah, no, like looking at my Instagram, it actually appears as if I'm happy, which is just weird.
Yeah, exactly. Or that I'm really content wherever I am and not kind of
longing for a like.
Stressed out and lonely, I was going to say.
So on that note.
Sorry about that, just went off.
No, that's okay. Fionn, sure, we'll see what happens on Thursday.
See you during the week.
Try and do a podcast. Good luck. Thanks.
All right, lads. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket now. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.